So when was the Vatican formed, and who were the first people that were in the Vatican, and did they all know this was made up?
Well, I mean, the Vatican, I don't know, it was a process. You can kind of trace it to Constantine, but the original Christians, the earliest saints, are all members of the Flavian family. So in terms of the Vatican being the religious headquarters, the first popes, like Pope Clement, are all in ancient documents described as being members of the Flavian family. If you go to Rome and you look at the catacombs, the very earliest catacomb, you see they're from the first century and they are from the Flavian family. Flavia Domitilla, who is either Titus's sister or niece, she's the one who organized these catacombs. All of the first saints, they're actually, so many of them, they're called the Christian Flavii. Neros and Aculus and Priscilla and Clemens, Flavia Domitilla. These are all members of the Flavian family. So the as history describes its, as Christianity describes its history, it's basically the Vatican was the Flavian imperial court. I mean, this was where the religion had its first saints. It had its administration. And you know, and there's all these ideas that Christianity was persecuted, but I think that these are fanciful and just propaganda and easily disproven. Rome was always the headquarters of the church, and if that was a religion was a problem, then that could not have been the case. And moreover, there's no logical reason for the Roman authorities to try to get rid of the religion, because religion is completely, you know, aligned with Roman interests. It's actually states in its canon to give to Caesar what is Caesar and to turn the other cheek. So, I mean, how much better religion for the Roman Empire could there ever be?
So the Vatican is accused of doing a lot of evil things, and that it's not really a good organization.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people accusing them of that, and there's some evidence of that. But do they think... I mean, how are they responding to what you're talking about? Do they think this is what you're saying is true, or do they believe that Christianity was started with Jesus and everything else?
You know, I don't think there's one voice for the Vatican. I think there's probably thousands of people who are aware of the truth, though. I'm not invited to the inner circle. If they ever do comment on me, it's derisively, and they don't really engage basically in debate. They just say it's impossible and say things like, well, Jesus is obviously historical. Look at how many people wrote about him. But the fact is, no one wrote about him during his life. All of the writings about the character occur after the fact, and there's no way to really prove that the authors of the histories of Jesus or the description of Jesus aren't getting the information right out of the Gospels, you see. So it's sort of like, well, if you have a Superman comic and then there's a series of people writing about Superman, it really doesn't matter how many subsequent authors carry on with the genre. If the original character was fictional, they cannot rework the character into history. Doesn't matter how many people, you know, want to make the claim. You have to go to the original literature. The literature is clear enough in my mind that anyone who reads my books can see that it's a fictional genre. And it's one that is obviously coming right from the Roman imperial court. So I would hope that the Vatican, it would actually try to have a more public response about the information. We'll see.
Them just to ignore anybody who questions them. But Jesus is such a beautiful character. And
yeah.
People have a relationship with Jesus because what he's teaching is really beautiful. And you listen to what he says and things. So how do you deal? I mean, how can you, what is your view on that? And, you know, that's why I like the idea that Christianity ended at that point. I mean, those teachings are really great.
Well, I mean, if you're going to make a world historical religion, you can't, start it from someone that's irritating. You have to have a very lovable and divinely inspired character. You have to have a philosophy that in many ways will make sense to people. You just can't do it any other way if you really want to have some impact in terms of the human race. And so, yeah, the character is, he's very peaceful. He has a lot of times when he talks about, violence being bad. You to really understand Jesus, though, you have to place the literature into the historical context. You have to place the Messiah into Judea during the time when Rome colonized it, and then the Messianic movement tried to rebel. If you look at Jesus from the perspective of the Jewish resistance, right, the people who are trying to fight and fighting and dying against the Roman Empire, then you can see that, well, wait a second. Yes, there are beautiful and eternal messages, but at this particular time, the tactical use of them is for the benefit of Rome. So, I mean, this is really, why I think Jesus is so memorable. And as you say, has so many beautiful statements, because I think ultimately everyone would want peace for mankind. Rome also had a motivation for wanting peace, though it wasn't to benefit, the inhabitants. It was to benefit basically Roman financial and political interests. So this is, my comment on that is I simply don't dispute the beauty and, positive influence, of many of Jesus's statements. It's just that when the literature is placed into the context of the first century, you can see that there was a tactical reason that for the use of it at this point that was evil. Everything that's beautiful doesn't mean, just because it's beautiful doesn't mean it can't be weaponized, and this is what basically the Roman, kind of geopolitical theoreticians did, is they took beautiful philosophy and weaponized it. They tried to make the rebellion against the empire, against dictatorship by Caesar, unpopular, because it was not pacifistic. It was not turning the other cheek. It was not, it was something that was not pleasing to the character of Jesus Christ.
Well, it's kind of sad, because they could take something that's beautiful and weaponize it. And so it, getting to the core of what Christianity is, I think, is, and separating out what might have been, which might have been a tool for evil people to use people, and separating out from what Christianity could be and what the core of it is, I think would be an important distinction. Because there's sure. there's a lot of base things that people believe that there's nothing, there's some great things there. And so how do you separate out where there's this evil influence where you're getting used versus, here's your religion, but let's separate out what they used, how they weaponized it.
Sure. I mean the place where I think the line can be easily drawn is just in the feudal system. I mean, the feudal system existed for well over 1,000 years. Jesus's representative on earth was in charge of it. The Pontiff Maximus was the head of the bureaucratic hierarchy. And yet, even though this was a Christian religion and Jesus was the divine centerpiece, it was a slave state. So there is exactly what I'm talking about. And this wasn't, something that happened, in a short period. I mean, this was basically the history of European civilization. It was until the Renaissance you actually started to break this up. And so that entire period you had Christianity used as a component of a slave state. And I think that this, is something people need to be aware of when they're trying to evaluate the religion, is that it's easy for it to be used as a weapon by oligarchs. And so I would just say that the basic problem with Christianity is that it's completely top down. You've got this scripture, and then you have this interpretation, and there are the priests. I mean, I would think that we should head as a people, if I can give a suggestion on that long, so broad, toward religion that brought in self-interest and reason, right? So that the individuals wouldn't lose their capacity to evaluate, from the scripture. They wouldn't be put in a position of basically accepting slavery because there was just this divine structure that they were part of, you see. So I would say, we should incorporate lots of the stuff that Christianity is built upon, but we should put into it, the component of reason and also of self-interest that basically the kind of motivations that are expressed in a well-functioning democracy. I think it would be great to have that inside of a world religion. I mean, Christianity has these cardinals. I mean, who are they? No one knows them. They vote. Here comes the Pope. And you don't have any sort of real connection from the people to the hierarchy. And I think that is just a formula for disaster because then power can misuse people's belief in the divine, misuse their desire for a peaceful world. The oligarchs can misuse and weaponize all of these, really wonderful dreams, of mankind.
So overall, what are your conclusions? What do you see? I mean, I'm sure you've thought a lot about this. What would you like to see with the body of work that you've done?
Oh man, I don't know. When I first did the analysis, I didn't like it, and I was upset about it, and I put it in a box. That was 1997, I think, and I didn't even look at it for 2 years because I had basically had a puzzle put in front of me, and I was just curious about the solution to a puzzle. And I did the analysis. I felt I understood the Gospels. I felt I'd solved the puzzle. I didn't really in any way have an agenda against Christianity. I mean, because I went to a Catholic school, I'm often asked, did you have like some agenda against Christianity? Did you have trouble as a young man? I mean, no, I love the priests. They were the best teachers I ever had. I thought they were terrific. I didn't have an agenda against Christianity, and I certainly didn't have an agenda against Christians. I basically put out the analysis because I just felt more guilt over not putting it out than concern over what it might do. I started to realize that, well, there are people that really could value, would have some value out of their analysis, so I should release it. So I did, and an odd thing happened. Like one of the very first people that contacted me was a woman in Portland who had cancer. And she was basically terminal, and she was a Christian, and she had read the book, and she was having a crisis, and we had a very long exchange. And that, was sort of like the watershed for me emotionally, because when I worked through with her the problems that she was having losing the faith, I could see that, the analysis was really strong enough. It really could take people out of their faith. I was wondering about that, if there was any kind of analysis, no matter how, clear or simple, if there could really move people from faith to non-faith. I wasn't certain about that when I released the book. Well, in this process, I became absolutely positive that was the case. And then the question is, well, what have I done? Is this good? And this is a small sample, but in that instance, I mean, the conclusion she had was that it was better to live knowing the truth than to die to face her mortality, being aware of these ideas than to have just this kind of faith that was not real, according to what I was saying. So
But you know, and
that's,
I gotta say, and I want you to continue because I think it's really important what you're saying. I've interviewed a lot of people who've had near-death experiences and say without a doubt there's something out there, but it might not be the way that, I mean, maybe we don't understand it. It doesn't mean, and that's why I said the end of Christianity when they wrote this or whatever. I will not let anybody tell me that there isn't anything out there that's beautiful because I feel it, you know? But that doesn't mean I stop looking for the truth, and it doesn't mean that what you're saying can't be true. It just means that, well, maybe we don't have it right yet, and maybe we were all manipulated, and what really is the truth, and let's keep digging. Let's keep searching.
Absolutely. I mean, I often have interviews with Alex Dakaris on Skeptico. He's someone who really is absolutely positive about basically the afterlife and about experiences that people have when they have the near-death moments. And we don't just have interviews, we also have talks just between the two of us because we're friends. And it's a very strong case. I mean, I can't really, say that my work is intended in any way to negate religion or ideas about the afterlife, or even it's not a position even on God. It's really just a work of literary analysis that tries to show the actual motivations of the authors and how it shows how what is really valuable and beautiful about spirituality can be weaponized. I mean, I think that's
well,
kind of...
and we're seeing some pretty crappy things going on, and so I would not be surprised that something as beautiful as Jesus would be turned around and manipulated and weaponized, because some of the evil that's going on in this world is over the top. And so as disturbing as this information is, especially to Christians, it does not mean that the core of Christianity is not truth. It just means that we gotta look at this seriously and say, okay, what is this really saying?
I agree. I mean, if you look at today, we have the Middle East wars, and many Christians are being, in my opinion, seduced into supporting them because of the idea that the Book of Revelation, the prophecies in the Book of Revelation are basically coming to pass in the Middle East. And I think that this is an example where the oligarchs can take someone's belief in scripture and then misuse it and use it against the individuals. And so this would be some hope I would have, is that that people who are being seduced by political leaders into seeing parallels between the Book of Revelation and the Middle East wars will say, wait a second, this literature, the Book of Revelation, is not coming from the hand of God. This is a political work, and therefore it shouldn't be used by political leaders to basically spin, you know, my mind and into supporting wars that are not something that are really in my interests. And so that's, you know, if there is like any sort of lesson that can be drawn, it's just be skeptical of the leaders. People, to have an effective democracy, you need a citizenry that has a lot of skepticism. And so that would be sort of the bright red message of Caesar's Messiah, is that it's easy to weaponize religion. People need to be more skeptical. Now, as far as the other side of, well, what does it mean about spirituality? Well, again, I would just agree with you. It just means that we should never give up on trying to achieve, you know, the spiritual world that we want and humans need to live in. But we just need to bring more scrutiny to, you know, how the ideas are created and who's creating them and what are the tactical reasons. We really need to have a more effective democracy. And that entails a more rational, a more compassionate, a more energized citizen. So that's all I can say. I mean, this is pretty much, you know, kind of empty suggestions in one sense. I'm just asking people to be, better. But I hope that what is really there is inspiration to be better.
Well, I hope so. And I think, I've had people on my show that have, where they question the Bible too, but they also have done a ton of research on after, you know, near-death experiences. And there have, one woman I had who had 50 years of research on this. And back 100 years ago, they actually used to take that science seriously. So there's a lot of information. And I've listened to other doctors and stuff that have put some scientific information together as well. And it's pointing to something real. And everyone says that it's beautiful. Not everyone. There's a small percentage that experience something that's dark, but the majority experience something light. And And so it's like, well, that can't just be nothing, because that's scientifically shown, you know, and people are saying this, and there's like factual evidence. But what does that mean? And I got to be honest, I am not surprised that somebody would weaponize a religion at all. And that to me is sad, but we have to wake up to, and the Vatican, how can the Vatican be doing so many things that they're doing if it really was the core of something beautiful?
That's a very good question. I mean, it just couldn't, in my opinion. And I think the behavior of the Vatican, its whole authority and financial benefit of the slave system we call feudalism just shows that, or suggests that at its core, there's not good, there's not a spirituality that has anything to offer the citizens. There's just a very sophisticated kind of political control. So, you know, it's really up to us to create our world. And you talk about the people that have seen this beautiful state, you know, that is waiting for us. Well, in my opinion, that is it is like a North Star for all of mankind. This is where we should head. That those states of consciousness that have that kind of perfection and clarity, why can't all of us share in that? And why do we have to basically become nearly dead to experience it? Why can't that be part of our normal consciousness? I mean, to begin with, you know, you have to start trying to take away all of the just tragic conditions of poverty and violence and, you know, poisoned food. I mean, so many things that are hurting people. I mean, all of the negative things which damages our physiology, it all keeps us from that point of consciousness that, you know, basically is a kind of perfection. But okay, it's just, this is the life we have. All of this means we just have to work harder toward it. When people, you know, come back from these experiences and they report to us, all I can say is this is basically a kind of North Star. This is a direction point, something we can head toward. Now the question is how to get there. Well, first of all, we have to retake control over our political system, take control over our political system, because right now there's just so much evil that is so easy to manipulate the citizens. You know, when your choices are Hillary or Donald, I mean, democracy is a joke. So this is, you know, my opinion is that
although I got to interject that Hillary was so bad that almost anybody looked good next to her. But anyways, keep going.
No, but, you know, incidentally, I mean, I think she was, I mean, basically,
I don't even know how they could.
She's a warmonger. She's one of the cruelest people I've ever seen. It's just beneath any standard of the democratic process that someone like that could have been a presidential candidate. How could this happen? But at the same time, I didn't trust Trump whatsoever. I knew as soon as he got in, the anti-globalism would fall. I mean, here, you know, just so on my soapbox, I mean, there's two issues to me. One are the wars, and the second is ownership of the Federal Reserve. I mean, if the oligarchs can create money out of thin air and charge us interest for it, believe me, we're never going to have a very functioning, well-functioning democracy, right?
It's all messed up.
Yeah, so that there's that. And then, of course, the wars, all of these bogus, you know, reasons that were there. I mean, basically, they just want to depopulate the region for some reason. So I'm afraid that these are the real issues, and, you know, same-sex bathrooms and stuff like that are distractions just to keep the puppet show going so that people don't see the strings and they just feel the hatred on one side of these emotional issues or the other. But in any case, look, we've got communication. We have people like you that are actually helping, you know, with information so that we now have a chance to actually have information we share among real people instead of mainstream media, which is just, you know, controlled by the oligarchs to wreck our minds and our capacity to think. This is the first time. And so we really have to take advantage of it. And if you don't mind, I would just like to throw a little bit of praise your way, because, you know, this, in my opinion, is this show and shows like this are, this is the way we can wake up, you know, and this is really what the future can hold. In the same way, the beautiful point of consciousness that people can see sometime under extreme conditions, well, I think the alternative media and a lot of people who are involved in it, they are that same point in an intellectual world. They're showing us where we could actually head. And this is the kind of communication we can have. This is really what we can be, is people that vet information, are skeptical, are not afraid to bring alternative opinions on, and ultimately have good motivations. Because
exactly. You have to have that good motivation underneath.
You've got to have it, right? Because if you have CNN and Fox News, at the base of it, you have the oligarchs with evil. But, as we are sitting here talking, I mean, we're, I hope, are representing a whole other spirit of humanity. We're just trying to be honest, trying our best, and we're hoping that the information is valuable to the people who listen to it.
Well, and whether you believe it or not, just honest debate amongst mature adults, and then let it all come out and we all think about it, and then have freedom of thought so people have the ability to have their own beliefs and what they want to have and how they believe and nurture it, but have mature, open debates.
100%. I mean, that's where we're headed. And I'm optimistic because, people say, well, the alternative media, it's chaotic. There are shills inside it. There's a lot of hatred, that goes on between the different people. And, my response is, so what? If you look at where we were 20 years ago in terms of information and the capacity to look at alternative ideas, we are making enormous strides. The alternative media is making incredible strides. And, I'll give you an example. 911 is now not believed by the large fraction of the population. Over 50% are not buying the government narrative. Now, whatever your position is, the idea that, one of their fundamental structures, is being contested by the majority of the citizen, this is a great sign, and it's completely related to the alternative media. And as you go forward, we can basically become a political party. And then we can start having some really effective democracy where
our interests
are represented, and you can't BS us anymore. You can't put Mitt Romney and all of these the oligarch because I call them lifetime actors, because I just think that someone like Hillary Clinton, I mean, she lies when she wakes up in the morning and gets out of bed. I mean, just every single.
I don't know how you could find anyone worse than that. I mean, the stuff that I've learned about her, I don't even know how she's still walking in the street. She's an evil person.
Well,
she's bad.
Yeah. I mean, you can't be at a high level politically in an oligarchic structure without basically giving your soul up to evil.
Oh, I mean, did that lock, stock, and barrel.
Sure. So they all did.
Yeah,
so
I guess we're using her as a scapegoat,
and it's not like
she doesn't deserve it. It's just she's not the only one. We all want to blame somebody. Well, there's a whole bunch of blame to go around.
Well, I mean, there is a whole bunch of oligarchic lifetime actors in control of the financial, political, and media, and all of these people need to be exposed, and the citizen has to become alert to the fact that what you're looking at is propaganda and sophistry. You're looking at people who know how to spin your mind and people who are lying just in a very clever way.
Is this what got you your viewpoint to say, okay, if our world is like this now, it wasn't some magically great thing back then. So what were they doing? Is that kind of how you were like, okay, I got to look at this objectively?
I wish I could claim to be so rational. I mean, it didn't happen in kind of any kind of orderly fashion. I just, after I wrote Caesar's Messiah, I started changing politically because I started to believe that, well, there's this very sophisticated propaganda, and I didn't really think that it ended with, the creation.
So it was the other way around.
Yeah, it was exactly the other way around.
Okay.
And I just sort of started to be more open-minded. And then because of that, people that I would have never have kind of exposed myself to, I started, realizing, I really should listen to them. I mean, what am I afraid of? I mean, all of the standard positions of media and of our historians There's just so much falseness in all this. I really should be open to alternative ideas. And this was at the same time that the alt media started to become more powerful.
Well,
And so basically,
I used to think that, the people I listen to now, 10 years ago, I would have thought they're complete whack jobs.
Of course, and me too. And this is what happened. I mean, basically, I just kind of had a second childhood, to use
it. Kind of, yeah.
And I kind of grew up with the alt media. I just became exposed to more and more people. And the more I started to be open to new ideas, the worse it got. I mean, basically, the less I was able to basically accept the narrative. And really, you know, what I saw was is there was just weaponized psychology, weaponized anthropology. I saw Hollywood as have being under control of these individuals. I saw them, you know. So at a certain point, I just said, I can't believe a single word that they say. And the only thing I can do is turn to the alternative media. I mean, I would listen to you because I just know that there's going to be a whole bunch of different opinions and that can be openly expressed. Now, you know, like, what do I believe? You know, I believe that we need to like vet our faith and our beliefs carefully. And I believe that we need to really allow people from the alt media the chance, you know, to give us their information. But we have to go further. We also have to participate in it ourselves. And that's the thing that is so wonderful, is that if you look at, you know, how the websites are, you know, basically evolving, is that people are expressing ideas. That it isn't just the person who comes up with the position. It's also all of the responses that people have. And people are becoming less and less afraid of giving their own opinions. And more it's becoming something that it's almost required. You want to be an active person on the site, you've got to have an opinion. You've got to defend the position. And you see, all of this in my mind is retraining us to be really effective citizens. Because, you know, going back to the 50s and 60s, we weren't. And now with the power of the internet being able to be used by you know, people, we can retrain ourselves and we can become, you know, more effective.
More critically thinking, more engaged, more questioning things, more mature. We're growing up.
Exactly. That's how I look at it, is that it's my second childhood. I'm just a child of the alt media, and I'm becoming smarter and more critical every day because I'm, you know, it's, and for one thing is, you learn that if you want to have a position, you have to expect to have it challenged. And I think this is just a wonderful thing. It isn't something that is psychologically crushing. You know, when someone stands up and says, you know, I don't like your opinion, I have an argument against it. Reason should be seen as basically as a kind of love, as the conscious state that you talk about, you know, at the end of our life. At that point, we should really all be sharing in reason. It's not that one person dominates another. It isn't used for slavery. This is just the really best understanding of reality. And this looks like the really the best path we can all take. And that's, we can all share in it. And when we lose kind of the intimidation, you know, that has been trained into us, you know, where we can't really have our own ideas, or if someone opposes us, we have a conniption, we're very emotional. You know, we have to get rid of the personality traits that are undemocratic. And we have to start to accept, you know, look, we all have to work together to help each other, to make ourselves more reasonable. Ultimately, reason is one of the things we need to all share in. And it can be, as I said, it's a kind of love that once we get it right, once it's something that is used by the people for ourselves and is not a weapon of the oligarchs, I think it'll become more and more apparent that if someone has a better idea, this isn't a point of domination. This is actually a point of liberation. We can start to recognize ourselves in one another. We all share in reason. We can all, the human mind is capable of understanding it and this vast web and understanding. And this is when I was talking before about, you know, what kind of religion I'd like to have. I really would love to have that as a component, because it protects us against the propaganda of oligarchs, and also because it opens up a kind of love between humans, a kind of intellectual communion where the alienation of the individual personality is broken down, and there's something that can be shared, something that's really real and tangible that we can share between ourselves. And so, you know, as I said, I'm having my second childhood. I'm just very optimistic. I just see positive signs everywhere I look.
Well, that's great. It's like we're in a new renaissance. I just hope the censorship doesn't shut us down and that we can continue.
They're gonna try. It'll be a battle. And the more of us that are out there, the better.
Well, thank you so much for joining the program. Where can people get your information, copy of your books?
Go to CaesarsMessiah.com. You can buy the books. There's a documentary about Caesar Messiah. I'm a public person. I take at joeatwell@gmail.com. I answer all questions. Sometimes it's just too many. If I don't get back to you, it doesn't mean I won't. It just means it's down the line a little bit. But I'm always glad to have criticism and encouragement whenever anyone wants to offer that as well.
Yeah, the criticism, you don't need to just send an email telling him he's a moron. The criticism should be, we're looking for mature debate is what we're looking for. So expect some of the moron emails,
I get a lot of that. And, I often consider it. I go, well, maybe they're right. But, it's more fun when you have technical criticism and things
exactly.
like that. But it's also, sometimes people just have ideas. I'm really interested in ideas on how to grow the alt media. I love it when people come forward with that and how to make it more responsive. I mean, I want us to replace CNN so that when they have, event like the Las Vegas shooting, that it basically people get their information through people who they can trust.
Through like Jake Morfonios and other people who are doing amazing research on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well,
have
a wonderful day, and thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Bye, Sarah. Talk to you.